Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. With all the news about the NSA spying on U.S. citizens' conversations without a warrant, and on commercial companies in 2005, exposing over 57 million people to possible identity theft through the loss or exposure of personal electronic records, and of new laws which will force towns, for example, to lock up birth and death certificates and probably put up bars and barriers in town offices, it may be time to take a wide-ranging look at personal privacy in the digital age. So today, we begin a four-part series on that very subject. We'll begin today by looking at the historical and legal concept of privacy in the U.S. On subsequent editions of the Electronic Cottage, we'll look at some current government laws, and possible breaking of laws, that affect your privacy as a citizen, then at commercial practices that affect your privacy as a participant in the economy. And in our final segment, we'll look at some ways that those who are concerned about personal privacy in this age of constant surveillance may at least reduce the intrusions on privacy that are so endemic today. Let's start with a very big question. How would you define the term privacy? If you're scratching your head a bit, you're in good company. Philosophers as far back as Aristotle have made distinctions between what they refer to as the public sphere, which is associated with political activity and the public life of a citizen, and the private domain, which has to do with family and personal matters. Words such as those in the following quote, written right here in the U.S., seem to reflect that kind of distinction. Quote, "Recent inventions and business methods call attention to the next step which must be taken for the protection of the person and for securing to the individual what Judge Cooley calls the right to be let alone. Instantaneous photographs and newspaper enterprise have invaded the sacred precincts of private and domestic life, and numerous mechanical devices threaten to make good the prediction that what is whispered in the closet shall be proclaimed from the housetops." End quote. Any guesses as to when those words were written? Well, they were penned by Louis Brandeis and Samuel Warren in the Harvard Law Review back in 1890. The authors were arguing for the need to develop a clear legal understanding of privacy in its basic sense as the right to be let alone. From this common sense and rather humble beginning, a right to privacy has found its way into U.S. jurisprudence and has formed the basic rationale for important decisions such as Roe v. Wade. Today, of course, we live in a digital world, and what the right to be let alone means seems increasingly challenging to define. Most people seem to agree that privacy means a freedom from unwanted intrusion, for example, into our homes or our personal diaries. But what about our email or personal telephone calls? Is it an intrusion on our privacy if someone reads our mail, physical or digital, or listens in to our phone calls, whether landline or cell phones? The Fourth Amendment to our Constitution, which provides protection from unreasonable searches and seizures, like all of the Bill of Rights, was adopted in response to problems of the time, specifically to limit the power of the executive in the fledgling U.S. government. But, of course, there was no internet or email or personal data on hard drives or flash drives back then. And figuring out how to apply the Constitution in the new digital environment occupies courts pretty much every day of the year these days. But does the idea of privacy extend farther in your mind than simply keeping some space around you, be it physical or virtual, free from intrusion? Some say yes. And they claim that privacy also includes a right to control information about oneself, not in the public sphere of politics and public citizen action, but in the private and personal sphere of family and personality and personal identity. So, is your privacy violated if the government coerces you into obtaining, for example, a social security number which uniquely identifies you, and then banks or credit card companies or the government itself uses that unique identifier to combine bits of information from many disparate sources to compile a quite complete picture of what you do and who you see and where you go and how you spend your money and where you live and how you probably vote and what you read and on and on and on. That's a question every person has to answer for him or herself, because we, in part at least, help to make it possible for that collection of information to happen. After all, we're often the ones who hand over the information voluntarily in the first place. 40 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago, it wasn't practically possible to assemble all of that disparate information, but it is today. Yet most of us continue to provide this tiny bit or that tiny bit of personal information to pretty much whoever asks for it, as if it were still 40 years ago, and not the interconnected digital 21st century that we all live in today. Everyone has to decide on how he or she defines privacy for him or herself, but that personal definition should probably be one that's based on the reality of today's digital information environment. As we've mentioned on past Electronic Cottages, the president of computer company Sun Microsystems, a fellow named Scott McNeely, some years ago famously commented when asked about privacy on the internet, quote, "You have zero privacy anyway. Get over it," end quote. These days, his view seems to have adjusted somewhat, since much of his personal financial information, social security number, bank account numbers, and so forth, was compromised, along with those of thousands of others, when a portable notebook computer carried by an Ernst & Young accountant was stolen out of the back seat of the accountant's car while he was eating in a diner. It's a new world, and perhaps we need to at least re-examine our personal views of what privacy means to us so that we can preserve, quote, "the right to be let alone," end quote, to as great a degree as possible in the world we live in today, not in the world that existed 40 or 20 or even 10 years ago. If you'd like to read up a bit on privacy to help you mull over these questions, here are a few places to start. Look up the term privacy in the excellent Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. It's available at http://plato.stanford.edu. If you'd like to take a look at the famous article by Samuel Warren and Louis Brandeis, try www.louisville.edu/library/law/brandeis/privacy.html. And if you'd like to keep up on issues of privacy in cyberspace, you can check out www.theprivacyplace.org and www.epic.org. That's the homepage of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. And if you'd like to continue this exploration of what privacy means, or doesn't mean, in the 21st century United States, tune in for future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.